If you would, take out your Bibles and open up to 1 Corinthians chapter 13.
What we're going to do from out of 1 Corinthians 13, verse 7, there's four things that are mentioned there. It talks about the love bears all things, it believes all things, it hopes all things, and it endures all things. We're going to take some time and just take each one of those individually as we go through over the next couple of weeks. And as I sat down this week and started looking through about what love bears all things, it's not really the normal way that we use that English word. Usually whenever you think of bearing something, sometimes we think of, you know, a fruit tree bears fruit. It's not that kind of bear. In bearing, a lot of times we think about bearing a load. That's not this word, but that'll be kind of what we cover whenever we come down to endures all things. So this bearing is not the carrying of weight, and it's not a bearing of fruit. It's a bearing like a protection. The NIV translates it that way. It says it always protects. You might start to wonder, what's it protecting? If you look back at verse 6, you'll see. It says, does not rejoice in unrighteousness, but rejoices with the truth. That's what love protects. That's why whenever people don't go after truth, they can't be going after love. Because love always protects truth. Whenever it says love bears all things, and thinking about protection, the Greek word's also used, and there's a root from it that means the roof. Seems kind of odd, doesn't it? What does a roof protect us from? Hopefully from all kinds of bad weather. Sometimes even from good weather. I mean, right now it's sunshiny outside. I kind of don't mind being protected from that. Kind of cooler in here. But it's that idea of being protected. It could be the same thing that you think of with an umbrella. It protects. I'll tell you the way it's really used in the first century. It's the same thing as a ship protects the boat from the water. How many of you would pay big money for a boat that would take on water? Doesn't make a lot of sense. So love bears all things. It protects from things that don't go after truth. Now I want you to notice, let's go back through and read these things again. Look at verse 4. It says, love is patient, love is kind, it is not jealous, love does not brag, and is not arrogant. Does not act unbecomingly, does not seek its own, is not provoked, does not take into account a wrong suffered, does not rejoice in unrighteousness, but rejoices with the truth. Now, in all those things, they're either positive or negative. That's no big revelation to us. We know that. But this bearing with all things, if you look down through this character that love has, look at what it protects. It protects that love is patient. That's good. It protects that love's kind. That's a good thing. Notice it changes here. It says it is not jealous. That's what's on the outside. It's not part of what love is. It's what love's not. It's what's protected from it. In other words, truth's not jealous. They don't have fellowship. Then, he says love does not brag. It's been protected from bragging and from arrogance. Then verse 5, it doesn't act unbecomingly. Love protects us from going after those things. Then he says, does not seek its own. You can't go after both. You can't have love and seek what you want. Then he says, it's not provoked and does not take into account a wrong suffered. Those are the things that are outside, not the things that are inside and part of the love of God. Notice then, it says, does not rejoice in unrighteousness, but rejoices with the truth. And if you can kind of think through all these things, the things that are negatives are the things, if you can imagine someone holding an umbrella, are the things that you're being protected from with love. However, the things that are positive, like love is patient, love is kind, those are the things that are on the inside that are being protected. And you notice, it's not just as you go through these verses that it's all things that are positive. There's several things in here that are negative. It says, love doesn't do this. It doesn't react like this. But it says, whenever you have a love that's like these things, It'll bear all things. It'll protect you from everything. It'll keep you from going after other things that are evil. Now, I want us to look at a specific example that deals with this exact same thing about bearing all things. Look over at 1 Corinthians chapter 9, which was read just a few moments ago. There's a situation going on at Corinth. And they're telling Paul and Barnabas, you know what? If you read through the first 7 or 8 verses of this chapter, Paul and Barnabas says, you know what? You don't have the right to marry. You don't have a right to make money or to make a living from preaching and teaching. And it also goes on and says, you know what? You don't have a right to eat and drink from those things. You don't have a right to it. Now, I want you to look down at verse 9. He says, for it is written in the law of Moses, and he goes all the way back to the old covenant, you shall not muzzle the ox while he is threshing. God is not concerned about oxen, is he? And he brings this up about the oxen. If you can kind of imagine the oxen treading around the millstone, goes in a circle all day long. But he treads out some of the wheat or some of the corn. Doesn't he have a right to eat? He's doing all the working. Can't he have just a little bit? It's interesting because he brings this up. This comes out of Deuteronomy. Is God really concerned about an oxen? Is that his big concern? No, of course not. So what's the point? Look at verse 10. It says, or is he speaking altogether for our sake? Yes, for our sake it was written, because the plowman ought to plow in hope and the thresher to thresh in hope of sharing the crops. So this is just plain and simple. If you go out and you plant your own garden, don't you expect to eat a little bit out of it? Imagine, even if it's not your garden, even if you don't own it, does the oxen own the wheat or the grain? No, of course not. But does he have a right to it? He does. Here he says, you know what? Is this all about oxen? Is God all that concerned about these animals? No. He's concerned about people. He says, you know what? Whenever you go out and you do those things and you plant and you thresh, there should be some for you. Look at verse 11. It says, if we sowed spiritual things in you, is it too much if we reap material things from you? Pretty plain and simple. He says, you know what? If we gave to you the good things, is it too much to expect little old piddly things from you? It's kind of like saying, you know what? If I gave you a big old gift of all these great things, don't I have a right to keep some of the piddly things? The physical things? Now, look at verse 12. He says, if others share the right over you, do we not more? Nevertheless, we did not use this right, but we endure all things so that we will cause no hindrance to the gospel of Christ. Now, I want you to notice something in this verse. If you're reading the New American Standard, it says to endure. That's the same Greek word we have in 1 Corinthians 7 about love bears all things. It protects. I want you to notice what's being protected here. If you notice, it says, we do not use this right. Paul and Barnabas have a right to these things. They can make a living by preaching and teaching. They have a right to take a believing wife. They have a right to eat and drink. They have that right. But they don't have to exercise it. They don't have to use it. So what's being protected? Look as it goes through. He says, but we endure all things, even not getting what we deserve. He says, so that we will cause no hindrance to the gospel of Christ. Look at what's being protected by Paul and Barnabas enduring. He says, the gospel of Christ is protected. That's why they can bear it. Because they're not out for self. Remember, this is a self-sacrificing love. If it's all concerned about self, then at this point you go, you know what? I have a right to it. And I'm going to take it whether you want it to, whether you want me to, or whether you think I have a right to it. It's not that kind of love. Paul and Barnabas say, you know what? We'll sacrifice what we deserve, what's rightfully ours, so that it doesn't hinder the gospel, so that it doesn't get in the way. A lot of times we talk about gospel is the power of God for salvation. Do you know that we can stand in the way of the power of God? We very rarely think about that. So many times we think, well, man, it's so powerful, it'll take over anything. That's true. But we can hinder it, and we can get in the way. You know, you can see a big machine. You can take a big expensive car and just start dropping things in it. Start putting filth in the oil. Start putting gravel in the gas tank. Well, here's something that can pull a couple tons, and now it can't do anything. You know, we can hinder the gospel too. Too many times we don't want to protect it. We just want to do what we want. That's not love. Hearing going through these things, he says, but we endure all. He says, we can make it through everything. We're not dependent upon you to live. He says, so that we will cause no hindrance to the gospel of Christ, so that we don't get in the way. Because if all of a sudden it becomes all about us, the gospel gets hindered. You know, we read through 1 Corinthians 13 and we see the character of love. Very seldom do we think if we move in an opposite direction that we're hindering the gospel of Christ, that we're standing in its way. Whenever we'll no longer be patient, we'll no longer be kind, whenever we're going to be jealous, whenever we're going to be arrogant and braggarts, whenever we're going to behave rude or unseemingly, you know what we're doing with the gospel of Christ? We're standing right in the way. We're a hindrance. Because we won't bear all things. It's like we'll protect it from everything but us. Because we're not concerned about it. We're not about a self-sacrificing love anymore. It's all about us. Now, notice as it keeps on going, verse 13. He says, do you not know that those who perform sacred services eat the food of the temple? And those who attend regularly to the altar have their share from the altar? He goes back to Old Covenant again. He says, don't you know that those who perform the sacred services, these are the priests. He says, don't you understand that whenever someone offers up an offering, that the priest who performs it is given a portion? He says, don't you think the same thing's true for us? You know, in thinking about myself, you know what? The Lord takes care of me. You know, we give of our own money, an offering to God, and God is giving it in a way that Brent and I are giving a living from it. It's something, because you're rarely going to hear it. But it says here that we have a right to that. Now here's something else. That doesn't mean that we get to wave our hands and pat ourselves on the back and tell you how much we deserve or how little we deserve. Because if we start doing that, you know what gets hindered? The gospel. And if it ever comes down to where we have to pick between money and hindering the gospel, I hope I pick not to hinder. Because right here, he says, you know what? Love will bear all things. It's not about the self anymore. It's not about me. It's about what's love going to do. It's going to protect truth and the gospel. That's what it'll do. Now, how would it be easy to turn for Paul and Barnabas if all of a sudden they're doing all this work and all of a sudden what they deserve and what is theirs as a gift from God is taken away? How easy would it be for resentments to come in? Now, here's the same thing. It's not just an application for myself. You ever had something that you had a right to? You ever had something maybe within an inheritance that you deserved a certain portion, but you knew within your family it was going to cause great division? Would you be willing to give up your rightful part? When at work you've worked harder and maybe longer hours than other individuals and you deserve a promotion, and yet you're looked over for someone else? Are you going to turn your back and say, you know what, that's what I deserve? Self-serving. Or will you protect the gospel and will you protect the truth? Will you not hinder it? It says love doesn't hinder the gospel and it doesn't hinder the truth. It bears all things. It protects. Now, I want you to notice, look at the verse 14 now. He says, so also the Lord directed those who proclaimed the gospel to get their living from it. He says, the Lord directed it. This isn't some Paul and Barnabas newfangled idea. The Lord directed it. He says, you can make your living from the gospel. That's not the idea of becoming a television evangelist and selling books and CDs and DVDs and everything like that. He says, but can you live by it? Is God okay with that? Is that righteous behavior? Yeah, it is. It's what he says right there. Now, usually, here's what happens when people are not willing to stand for the gospel and to stand for truth. When someone tries to step in and take what you think is rightfully yours, we'll take it anyway. Man, it doesn't protect. When somebody tries to do that, boy, we get embittered. And boy, do we gain resentments. I want to show you how Jesus himself made sure that he bared up and that he protected the truth and that he protected his gospel. I want us to start back in Leviticus. Look real quickly back at Leviticus chapter 19. Leviticus chapter 19, and look at verse 18. It says, you shall not take vengeance nor bear any grudge against the sons of your people. But you shall love your neighbor as yourself. I am the Lord. We're going to take some time from this point to the end of the lesson. And I'm going to pick on one thing. We could take handfuls of ideas here of things that are protected by those who bear up under love and truth and the gospel. But I want you to notice one statement in this verse. He says, you can't bear any grudge against the sons of your people. If somebody wrongs you, God says it's evil to have a grudge. Even after things are over and you say, you know what, I forgive you for that, but you hold on to the resentment, he says, you're not loving your neighbor. He says, you're holding on to a grudge. And if you notice, he says, you know what the opposite of holding a grudge is? Will you love? Will you love even when people take something that was not their own from you? Will you still love them? Will you love your neighbor? Or are you going to show resentment and a grudge? Talked about love bears all things. It's going to protect truth. It's going to protect the gospel. It's not going to hinder and get in the way. Now I want us to take some time and look at Jesus. Look over at Luke chapter 23. I'm going to show you three examples just within Luke 23. And you tell me if you think this is a man who's holding a grudge in any way. Luke chapter 23, and look down at verse 28. Excuse me, look back at verse 27. It says, and following him was a large crowd of the people and of women who were mourning and lamenting him. Here's Jesus. He's headed out to the cross. But Jesus, turning to them, said, daughters of Jerusalem, stop weeping for me, but weep for yourselves and for your children. Does this sound like resentment? Does this sound like a grudge? Does this sound like someone who says, you know what, I'm concerned about me and not you? Here's someone in the middle of the worst thing to ever happen to an individual, turns around and looks out and says, I want you to think about yourselves. Don't be so honed in on me. He says, you need to think about you. Then verse 29, here's why. He says, for behold, the days are coming when they will say, blessed are the barren and the wombs that never bore and the breasts that never nursed. Then they will begin to say to the mountains, fall on us, and to the hills, cover us. For if they do these things when the tree is green, what will happen when it is dry? He shows no concern for self. These are some of the same people who earlier on were doing all kinds of other things. He's just talking to the daughters of Jerusalem. It doesn't say that he's talking specifically to Mary Magdalene or anyone like that. He's talking to all of them. These are some of the same people who just hours or minutes ago were saying, crucify him. Boy, how do you feel right after somebody calls you out to something that you're not guilty of? Do you say, you know what, I think you should be concerned with yourself. Don't worry about me. I'm okay with being wronged. See how love bears all things? Love doesn't turn and all of a sudden become self-seeking. It says, I'm going to protect truth. That's what I'm here to stand for. Now here's Jesus who's living the gospel. Now, like I said, no resentment from him. Look at the next statement. Look down at verse 34. Here's number two. But Jesus was saying, Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing. And they cast lots, dividing up his garments among themselves. Here they are. They've gone out to the place of the skull. There's one being crucified, one on the left, one on the right. And Jesus looks out. And he says, Father, forgive them. If we become people who are centered on self and not centered on protecting truth and his gospel, we'll never do things like this. I want you to notice something else. Jesus says, Father, forgive them. And he says, and here's why I want you to forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. They're ignorant people. They have no clue. We need to be that same way. We need to bear up under. We need to protect truth. Whenever people do things against us, to not become self-centered, but to say, you know what? They don't know what they're doing. Too many times we get concerned with what we're missing out on. What advantage am I being taken away from? It says, love bears all things. Notice it's everything. Not just some things. Total. Everything. Here's Jesus. I want you to think, these are not just easy old words to say. He's surrounded by the chief priests and the scribes and the elders, who had all kind of come together so they could scheme up this plan so that they could kill him. He doesn't say, Father, give them what is theirs. It's what they deserve. You know what? Even the high priest had heard a prophecy that there was going to be one who died for the nation of Israel. Jesus says, Father, I want you to forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. Ever had other people do things wrong to you? Well, I pray we say the same thing. Father, I'm not going to hold a grudge. I want you to forgive them. I want you to show them truth. I want you to show them your gospel. I'm okay with being wronged, because I understand they're ignorant and they don't know. They don't know any better. You don't see Jesus holding any grudges, do you? Because I'll tell you this, if he would have held a grudge, he wouldn't have been perfect to die for us. That's how we know he doesn't. Let me show you another. That shows you there's no grudge against those people. Let me show you there's no grudge against God. Look down a little further and look at verse 46. It says, "And Jesus, crying out with a loud voice, said, Father, into your hands I commit my spirit. Having said this, he breathed his last." He doesn't say it with his fist in the air. He says it with a fist nailed to the cross. And he says, "Father, I commit." He says, "I'm giving it to you." He says, "Into your hands I commit my spirit. It's yours. You do with it what you need to do." Now, we think of that, that just sounds like, well, he's dead, it's all over. But that's not it. He says, "Father, I'm giving it over to you. It's time for you to do what you said you needed to do. I give it over. Even if I have to pay a higher penalty than the cross." And he did. I want you to look over at Acts chapter 2. This is on the day of Pentecost, and they're looking back. Look at verses 22, 23, and 24. This is looking back on the death of Jesus and his resurrection. It says, "Men of Israel, listen to these words. Jesus the Nazarene, a man attested to you by God with miracles and wonders and signs which God performed through him in your midst, just as you yourselves also know. This man delivered over by the predetermined plan and foreknowledge of God, you nailed to a cross by the hands of godless men and put him to death." Verse 24. "But God raised him up again, putting an end to the agony of death, since it was impossible for him to be held in its power." I want you to look at the next few verses that are quoted from Psalms. Verse 25. "For David says of him, I saw the Lord always in my presence, for he is at my right hand so that I will not be shaken. Therefore my heart was glad and my tongue exalted. Moreover, my flesh also will live in hope." Here's why. Here's why verses 25 and 26 are true. Look at verse 27. "Because you will not abandon my soul to Hades, nor allow your Holy One to undergo decay." He says, you wouldn't abandon my soul to Hades. You wouldn't leave me in Hades. You wouldn't abandon me and I'd walk away. You know, whenever Christ died, the suffering didn't end whenever he died physically. He had to go and pay the price for a soul. He had to go, and he wasn't abandoned. Talk about him being in the grave 3 days and three nights. How would you want your soul to be left in Hades for 3 days and three nights? And so in Luke 23, whenever he says, "Into your hands I commit my spirit, Father," he's not saying it's all over. It's not done. He's left to suffer. Usually we think of the torment of the cross, and that amazes us. I can't point to a verse to show you that it's worse, but it sure does make me think so. To be left there for 3 days and three nights in Hades. And Jesus' attitude going into it is, "Father, into your hands I commit my spirit. You take it from here. I have to protect truth." Because if he doesn't suffer in that way for us, he can't justify us. And God will not be justified in redeeming us back through him. You think of the extent to which Jesus is willing to go to protect truth and that God is just. Shames me. So many times I fall so short of that. but a love that bears all. How do you know that's true? That he wasn't abandoned? Look at the second part of verse 27. It says, nor allow your Holy One to undergo decay. When Jesus' physical body is still in the tomb, it's a beaten up body. It's mutilated. After being scourged, beaten with reeds, beaten with fists, spit upon, and crucified, this is not a body that you would think would not undergo decay. Whenever we have open wounds, we get real concerned because of gangrene setting in, because of other things that decay away. His body didn't undergo decay. That's the sign that his soul wasn't abandoned, that his spirit wasn't abandoned. And yet to see the attitude of Jesus say, Father, into your hands I commit my spirit. And he suffers in a way that, Lord willing, we'll never have to see, experience, or know. But he goes through that for us. Love bears all things. That's not just all things that you see here on earth. That's even the unthinkable and the unseeable from where we now stand. This is the love that we've been loved with. And to think all he asks of us is to protect truth and to protect his gospel. That's all he asks. For some reason, that seems so small comparative to what he's done. You don't see grudge. You don't see him looking back in disgust. You don't see resentment. All you see is love that's self-sacrificing, even when nobody else would. So whenever you're in a marriage and your mate has torn you down time and time again, will you bear up and do what's right? Will you protect truth? It's interesting as it talks about husbands and wives. It says, you know what? You go after what's right and you will not hinder the Word of God. You won't stand in its way so that no one have anything to say evil of us. Same thing in a workplace. Same thing all over. Oh, that we'll bear up. And God has said, I'll give you the fuel to do it with. I've placed my spirit in you. You can do it. You can make it. My son overcame, and it's because of his overcoming that you can too. Love bears all things. And all things means more than what you can just see. I pray this is what we strive for. I pray this is our goal. I pray we look at the death of Jesus and find so many things to imitate that it just blows our mind, and to see how much grace we've been given. If there's anyone here tonight, if we can be of any aid, will you come?